That's a different one.
Yep.
Well, when's it going to say? Radio. There it is. Man, she must have been taking a nap or something. I don't know. Good evening, Jesse. Jesse, of course, sneaks in right under the wire.
Always.
And I'm trying to unmute him. It's the platform's just kind of sitting there going
around and around.
Yeah, well, it's funny. It doesn't want to unmute him. Evidently, he's not supposed to talk tonight. Yeah, it shows that you're not even unmuted yet. It's just sitting there going around and around and around.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Oh, well, heck, don't worry about it. Oh, we're not going around and around and around.
Yeah. Oh, there, it finally did that. Well, I mean, that's pretty interesting that it took that long. Of course, I don't know, you're kind of a stubborn cuss, so I guess it kind
you
of
know
goes
that.
Along with the territory, right? Well, I know, that's what I said.
Yeah.
That. It goes with the territory.
You got it, buddy.
Yeah.
We rolled in about 2 o'clock this morning, Cody and I. And,
oh, my God, 10 o'clock. Well, you stop.
No, 2 o'clock, not 10 o'clock.
Oh, 2 o'clock. Oh, okay. Well, if you rolled
in morning,
at 2 o'clock,
yeah.
Then, yeah, I was going to say, I thought you were driving straight through.
Yeah. No, it was a jump, buddy. It took us 16 hours to get over there.
So. Well, but two of you to drive, that helps.
Yeah, I totally don't like to drive. I drove about 90% of the way.
Did you drive the whole thing?
Pretty much, yeah. I drove like 2 hours. I took a nap. He's not
yeah,
much
but
for
those
driving.
You're used to those power naps and then just spring back in action.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. It doesn't bother me in the
it's
least.
It's a way of life for you.
Yeah, I don't
it's
care.
It's been
it
for,
me.
Forever.
Yeah.
All right, there's Mr. Larry.
It's like and you used to back it, in the day.
Oh.
No big deal.
For years, I went on 3 hours sleep a day. Good evening, Larry. Yeah.
Hey there.
How you doing tonight?
What's going on, Larry?
I'm good. How are you guys?
No complaints.
Oh, I'm just
peachy.
Clicking along. I just, you know, I'm fine as frog's hair. In fact, they couldn't even see my frog's hair over at the post office this afternoon when I mailed 2 more lawsuits to the process server for Midland.
Nice.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And I got an email today from the process server that they served 2 of them on Monday and 2 today. Hmm. And there's another other envelope over there, and that one I think has Friday's date on it. I think that's when it goes in the mail. Oh, and then there's the 2 for next week. So, in other words, the process has resumed.
Hey, nothing wrong with that.
Well, they don't want to talk settlement, so away we go.
To nothing
do they
wrong
serve
with
one?
That.
Do they serve one for free after every 15 that you pay for?
No, actually, they're giving me a deal because normally it's $70 per lawsuit, and I'm getting 2 of them for $100, so I send them 2 at a time.
That's high volume, dude. You're good. That's right. It's high volume. You're good. Well, welcome everybody to our Tuesday night open call. I was on the call Dave last night, which was kind of fun, actually. Cody learned a lot last night as he was listening to the call, which was pretty cool. And it helped me
yeah,
keep
it was good to have
awake.
You.
Yeah, thank you. It was nice to be there. It really was. Of course, tonight, you know, we always talk about a bunch of legal information and all our situations and everything else. But if you want legal advice, guys, you know where you need to go. Go see an attorney. There's nothing we can do for you. We wouldn't even know what the heck to do with it. So with that being said, it's that simple. I don't know what else to say. We've said it 1,000 times if we said it once. Legal information is a lot of fun. Legal advice, I have no idea what the hell it is. So we'll keep it very, very simple. I'm going to do some paperwork while we're doing this call because I've gotten a lot of stuff while you were gone or while I was gone that I need to address. Some good news. I got another $6,000 in the mail today worth of envelopes, which I enjoy. Yeah, they never stop, David. You know these guys are about as you know sharp as a butter knife. So it's pretty nice. And then I got another one from the association out at one of my rental properties. that I need to respond because they want to do prerequisite mediation. So I need to call them tomorrow on putting in some sod.
Jeez. Well,
yeah.
I tell you, I got a letter from an attorney, or an email, I should say, not a letter, but an attorney, because I had sent a notice of intent to a company, and it was kind of amusing, really, what he wrote me. He said, "I represent so-and-so and have received notice of your letter sent to them regarding calls that you have received. I apologize for any inconvenience. You may communicate with me going forward regarding these calls. I have reviewed the information you provided, and the information I provided included a federal lawsuit, a draft copy. All of the calls that were made to the number you provided were manually dialed via a desk call. In other words, the calls that were made to you were made when a collector physically dialed your phone number hand to keypad in order to complete the call. Therefore, the calls you received did not fall under the TCPA under any interpretation. Again, I apologize for any inconvenience you may have suffered, as I understand and your phone number has been removed from my client's system and it will not be called again. Please let me know immediately if you receive any additional calls. For your troubles, I have received authority to offer you, drumroll,
$1,000.
$1,000. Twenty-five phone calls. $1,000 in return, a general release.
That's not going to really cut it.
No, and just to read just very partially what I wrote back, just to give everybody an idea how I deal with this. You know, it's you learn from what other people do. Thank you for responding on behalf of so and so. Unfortunately, what you said in your email is categorically incorrect, and I believe you know that. So-and-so did not manually dial the calls made to my wireless phone. May I suggest that you review paragraphs 11 through 13 of my draft federal complaint? I have attached a copy of that complaint for your convenience. If you will review the draft complaint, you will see that the manually dialed explanation is nonsense, but expect it, quite honestly. That is not a valid defense, and I'm sure a jury would concur after providing them sufficient additional information obtained through extensive discovery to supplement the evidence already in my possession. And then I go on to say that their offer is unacceptable. Well, the thing about it is, I'm going to go into my draft complaint, and I'm going to read you guys those three paragraphs that I referred to. 11 through 13. 11. Further, on several occasions when plaintiff would answer defendant's calls, defendant would not say anything, and there would only be dead air. 12. On several occasions when plaintiff would answer defendant's calls, he stated, "Quit calling this number," or "Quit calling this phone." But there was only dead air, and it disconnected the call. And number 13. Plaintiff, at or near the time each of the calls was placed to his wireless phone by the defendant, made handwritten notes of all call details, including but not limited to the date, time, whether he answered the call, and what was said by the caller, if anything, what he said, or whether a voicemail message was left. That's what I referred him to, and he's going to say they were manually dialed, and he had looked at my material.
And you know what happened, Dave? Is
see how
time
dumb
you said
some of these people are?
Yeah, well, it's your fault.
My fault.
Because every time you'd say, "Quit calling," you would scare the collector, and he would just hang up. That's why there was dead air.
Yeah, I must have a really gruff voice when I talk to him.
You didn't know that? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's exactly what happened.
Yep.
I attest to it for them.
Oh, okay.
They were frightened
and tremulous. Jesse, you've been hanging around
with
far too many attorneys lately.
I know, right? I swear, man.
Yeah, they were frightened and tremulous and intimidated.
There you go. Tremulous.
Yeah,
now you're getting fancy words. I got to go get Webster Dictionary again. What's wrong with you?
But the reason I read that for you guys is, you know, we've got new people on here, and we got people, you know, well, how do you deal with these kind of things when they say
that
kind of nonsense?
Absolutely.
That's how you deal with these people. I tell them right up front. Oh, and then there was one other thing in there when I told them, you know, please go talk to your client regarding this matter and see if they're willing to make an offer of substance. And I said, just I would like to point out that I don't like to be insulted. In other words, don't
I got one for you, too.
$1,500 crap.
This, right. Well, you know, you should just say $1,000 per call, and we got it settled. That's all.
Yeah.
Anyway, you remember Mr. Dick O'Neill. Remember I was dealing with that? And no, I haven't had a chance to talk to our buddy. But anyway, remember they validated the debt really quickly and they sent some very suspect documents. So our response says, in reviewing, I have to get this out today, it says or tomorrow, in reviewing your claim to the debt as set forth in the material included with your letter, I see some anomalies, which make it at least suspect. Accordingly, I must request further response as follows. First, there is an assignment from Aurora Loan Services, LLC, which appears to arise from nowhere. You ought to have some sort of explanation for this. And guys, listen, just for the listeners, the smart aleck kind of whimsical responses, it's because this is a joke to me at this point. I don't even take it serious anymore. I think Dave does kind of the same, and Terry, you just get tired, so you just kind of play it off, you know, because there's nothing to be panicked about. But anyway, second, there's an assignment from Freddie Mac, which appears to actually be executed by an officer of Dick O'Neill. If there is some authority for Dick O'Neill to assign to itself, well and good. As well, I should be informed as how the obvious conflict of interest is avoided. Third, you shall know a foreclosure sale in 14. My records show consent to foreclose in 11. In 11, okay, with a bank using commercially reasonable methods to expedite the case. A foreclosure sale in 2014 is inconsistent with this, leading me to the unavoidable conclusion that the bank, which may have been your predecessor, caused the deterioration of the property during the years it sat idle. If there's some excuse for this delay and consequent devaluation of the property, please let me know. But thank you. I must decline to respond to your demands because he was asking for money, of course. And that's it. Have a great day. You know, I mean, what else are you going to do? But you can't take it too serious. You know, I'm calling them their BSBS. That's fine. If you have authority to assign to yourself, let me know. Just show it to me. And how are you going to avoid the conflict of interest, which I always find to be very interesting. So this is how you guys get to the bottom of things. You ask, and then they respond. They send you all kinds of suspect stuff. And then you just keep asking. And that's it. And these guys, by the way, have a massive class action against them in the state of Florida, literally from the tip to the top, for serving people and prosecuting lawsuits in the wrong jurisdictions, meaning most of the deficiency judgments in the state of Florida were on rental properties. So just like this one was a rental property of mine, I let go because I didn't want it. It's a bad area of town, whatever. Even though I live in A County, they are probably going to serve or try to serve in another county and say that they tried to serve and couldn't get service. So this class action is for wrongful service, sewer service in essence. And then on top of that, they would proceed with the lawsuit for the deficiency judgment. Number two on the lawsuit, and that's for anybody listening who lives in Florida, that's dealing with these dicks, I mean Dick O'Neill, when that foreclosure statute passed last year, when they modified it, it gave them 1 year from the date of sale to go after the deficiency. Well, apparently they don't care. They're going after them because nobody's responding to them because they're all filed in the wrong counties. So just for you guys to be aware of, something I'm dealing with. That's good news for me anyway. I'm happy. They're going to be owing me some money here soon, so I don't care.
Yeah. Just more fun and games.
Yeah.
And
Dave, you know my
ass.
I could give a rat's ass. You know, I'm sorry, guys. That's just the way I believe, you know.
Yeah. Now, something else I wanted to bring up, Jesse, that you and I talked about on the phone some. If anybody has been completely asleep and hasn't noticed what the stock market has been doing lately, you need to wake up. Jesse has sent emails out. We've talked about it on the calls. Last Thursday, the Dow was down 380 points. Friday, it was down 530 points. Yesterday, at one time early in the session, the Dow was down over 1,000 points. And today, the market had a 600-point turnaround. The market was up 400 points today, and it closed at one point, and it closed down 200 points. In other words, the rally where everybody thought everything was fine and everybody started buying back into the markets again blew up in their face today.
Yep.
And the markets are down hard tonight again with Japan just opening. In fact, the Dow right now, the Dow futures contracts, it gives an indication of what the cash is going to do. It's only down 155 points tonight, and it's off the lows. But the reason I'm bringing this up for everybody is the economy, I think most of you know that the economy hasn't been too awful great.
Well, no, there's a lie, Dave. People think it actually is getting better. So that's really what
there,
we need to look at. Is the deception.
Not in my neck of the woods.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Is the when people most of the people here know that it's not getting better. They're not buying into the lie. But my point in bringing this up, because you know Jesse and I talk about it. Jesse is a trader. I've been a trader for many years. The whole point of this is people need to start really paying attention to their finances and starting to squirrel some money away. And if you don't have the money to have a cushion for you, I think you better get on the ball in a way you can make some money, even in a rotten economy, is learning about going after people with these violations and bringing cash flow in from this. This is a source of much-needed income for a lot of people, and it can be for you if you're not doing it yet. If you're not, I don't know why not, but lost my headset there. The bottom line is we've talked about the markets were going to take a tumble. Well, folks, it's here, and this is just the beginning. It's going to get a lot worse over the next several years. And if you don't start taking action to do something now, you can be caught in that pinch. You may have a job now, but very possibly a year or two from now, you may not have a job. You may not be able to pay your bills. And when people start chasing you and you're going, oh, my God, you know, I guess I'm going to have to learn about that stuff. That's not the time to learn when you have the deer in the headlights look. The time to learn is now when you don't have somebody breathing down your neck. So that when and if the time comes that you have the opportunity to take advantage of this stuff, which basically is just about any time if you're really paying attention with your credit reports and stuff, now's the time to learn when there's less pressure on you. And I urge everybody to get on the ball. If you've been procrastinating, if you've been kind of lackadaisical and kind of slow in what you have been doing with studying and learning, I hope this becomes a catalyst for you, because the world around us is going to be changing dramatically in the next several years, and not for the good. So I just want to bring that up. It's here upon us, and you'll see it on the nightly news. You'll see it in the front page of the newspaper. And the comment on CNBC website here, I'm reading it, "Traders spooked after head fake rally." Yeah. See, they thought everything was fine when the market turned around and ran back up. And all of a sudden, that all disappeared. It took another nosedive today, big time. So don't let it catch you unaware.
Well, don't forget, Dave. Yeah, and listen, everything you're saying is spot on. I've been trying to warn people. I think a lot of people have been trying to warn people. The problem is, let me just make this observation and forget problem. What lies in your debt's website is not only for people who are having financial issues. It's not. It has nothing to do with just that. It's all around cleaning up your credit. People are violating, you know, Larry turned me on to that 4.5, 5 years ago. I said, wow, you could have an 800 credit score, and actually you should be having an 850. Because they're violating, they're misreporting, or there's misinformation on that report. You don't have to be in debt. You don't have to be in foreclosure. You don't have to have that. If people are calling your cell phone or sending you unwanted texts, you don't have to be, again, has nothing to do with you being in debt or in foreclosure. There's still things that are going on every single day that affect the average American. And again, if everybody, 175 million working Americans woke up one day, went and checked their credit, Experian and all of credit would be out of business overnight. Completely out of business. They couldn't handle the lawsuit. The courts would be overrun. That's the point I'm making is don't think that just because you're not in debt or you don't have any issues, you still can't use the site for your benefit. So on top of what Dave said is you don't necessarily have to, but this is a time to start learning. Get ahead of the curve now. Don't wait till it happens. And it never fails. The membership on the website starts to dwindle when everybody starts thinking the economy's okay and the foreclosures have slowed down and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And then it'll hit the fan, and boom, our membership goes through the roof. It's exactly what happened when we started with less than your debt. So just remember that. Don't wait till the last minute. Don't do it.
There's no such thing as worthless knowledge.
That's the way I look at it, Terry. You're right. But there you go. So that's just my 2 cents.
Really? Sound more like a nickel to me. But I think it was worth more than 2 cents. But anyway, I hope you guys pay attention. There's a reason why we brought that stuff up, and it isn't just to get people going to the website. It's, you know, hopefully to get you guys thinking about this stuff and be ahead of the curve, because things are going to change. They really, truly are. And I've spent 20 years studying and learning about this stuff, and I've already had some people go, how did you know that was going to happen? Well, it's because I learned, just like I learned the stuff that's in the website and what we talk about on the calls. And speaking of the calls, if anybody has any good news, hit the one key on the keypad in your phone. That'll put you in the queue. That's for good news only to begin with. And if we get any people calling in with that, then we'll take that. Otherwise, we'll see if the moderator or any of the moderators have any good news, and then we'll go to Q&A. So I don't see anybody jumping up at the moment. Any of the moderators got any good news they want to share?
Well, I already gave you mine.
Okay.
Yeah, I just
got to
work on
me.
Reply brief for 63 pages of ridiculousness.
Yeah, you got your appellee brief, and we had a discussion about this afternoon. It's really quite humorous in many ways. All right, well, we don't have anybody else that's popped up, so I'm going to open the call for Q&A. Anybody that has questions, hit the one key on the keypad in your phone. That'll put you in the queue, and we'll take you in the order that you jump in there. And first up, we have 216. We'll see how
good evening, everyone.
Quick it is. There you go. You're on. Go ahead.
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Hi. This is Omanika. I'm calling from Cleveland. I spoke with you guys several times, but this particular, the reason that I'm calling today is regarding the lawsuit that I filed against an attorney. He placed a stop payment on a third-party check that was issued to me. And we've been going back and forth, and I've decided to sort of not really send an ultimatum, but I kind of want to get this over with. So I addressed a letter to him. Is it okay that I read the letter to you? It's not super long.
Well, just get to the meat of the letter.
Okay. The letter
what
is...
what it's really about, yeah.
I addressed it to him. Dear Slimeball Attorney, I find myself duty-bound to inform you of my future actions. It is my intention to elucidate the following organizations with regard to the legal issue at hand. The organizations are as follows: Commission of IOLTA, National Association of IOLTA Programs, the Comptroller of the Currency, Federal Banking Authority, the Cleveland Bar Association, Certified Grievance Committee, Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, Office of Consumer Affairs, Federal Financial Examination Council, Supreme Court of Ohio Rules of Professional Conduct, Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, Federal Reserve, Consumer Help, and last but certainly not least, the Ohio Attorney General Mike DeWine.
All right, I'm going to stop you right there. Why all these different organizations?
Because I really want him sanctioned and reprimanded for what he did, because he stopped payment on the check when he had no right to. There was no reason for him to place a stop payment on the check. And instead of being honorable about it and ethical about it and, you know, simply, you know, reissuing the check to me, he's, you know, decided to fight me. And I just find his actions unconscionable, actually. And, you know,
I ask you is because there's a lot of time and energy and postage going to a lot of these, and a lot of those people could care less what this idiot did. That's what I'm just telling you. They're just people, sweetie. Unfortunately, you know, you've got some good ones in there, but the majority of those, and if the moderators disagree, let me know, but, you know, they could care less. It really. I hate to say it. God, I hate to say that, but, you know, they really are. They could care less.
Most of those get letters like that all the time. And it's like, oh, yeah, we got another letter from somebody that's all pissed off about something.
Yeah, seriously.
And then it goes in the shredder or the trash. Maybe they don't even go to the trouble of shredding it. But anyway, what specifically, what is his reason for stopping paying on this check? I mean, there's got to be some kind of explanation here, and I'm curious as to what that is.
Dave, the important point about those people not caring, the attorney knows that too.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yep. But what's this attorney's, you know?
Oh, he's been reprimanded.
Go ahead. Explain to us, if you would, please.
I was just going to say that he's been reprimanded before by the Ohio, which one of them is it, by the Bar Association in our state, our area, the local bar association. He's been reprimanded before, so I'm just assuming he doesn't, you know, want to have another reprimand or a sanction by them, at the very least. So,
yeah.
But what I wanted to know was, is it okay for me to include? You have 10 days from receipt of this correspondence to contact me via email in hopes of reaching an amicable resolution. Is that like extortionistic?
No, that's not extortion, but you didn't answer my question.
No.
Your question
was... What is his reasoning for putting a stop pay on this check?
He said that the reason that he placed a stop payment on the check was because his client that he issued the check to informed him that, you know, the stop payment should be placed on the check. And
but what was the reason, though? There's got to be a reason.
What reason did he say?
Wait a second here. This is getting a little strange. He wrote the check to another party.
Mm-hmm. And the other party
I'm assuming that party endorsed it to you?
That's correct.
Okay. And now all of a sudden they're wanting to leave you out. In other words, that person endorsed it to you because that person owed you money?
Right.
Okay. But what's the reason why the stop pay was put on?
The attorney said, we didn't go, it wasn't called a deposition, but it was sort of a bench trial in the judge's chambers. And I had a court reporter to come in and all of that. And he essentially said that he was just told to by his client to place a stop payment on the check. But it was my assertion in one of my motions that he can't, you know, follow an illegal directive given by a client. And, I mean, to that he'd never responded. So my next step was to file for a summary judgment. That's what I'm drafting this evening. But I just wanted to, you know, kind of send this to him also.
Well, no. You say file for summary judgment. You sued him for the money?
I did, yes. And that,
under what cause of action?
The cause of action was that he stopped payment on the check, like.
What
statute?
Yeah, but under what statute?
Oh, the statute. Our statute is. I don't want to be rattling tons of papers in your ear. Not the actual complaint. Ohio Revised Code Title 23, Chapter. It's 2307.61. The plaintiff is entitled to compensatory liquidated damages in the amount of 3 times the value of the check because a stop payment was placed on the check before I was given the right to cure. And the number for that one is.
I just wonder whether you've got any recourse on that because the check wasn't made to you.
No, it wasn't. But what I was able to find in our local statute was that any rights, once the check is endorsed to the third party, any rights extended
to that party.
Right, so the initial person is thusly extended to the person that it's endorsed to. Because
it makes total sense. Yeah.
Because of the
right.
fact that this is
yep.
fiat currency that we're working under, and, I mean, the money's only backed by the confidence that the people have in it. These kinds of things can't go on to shake the people's confidence in the monetary system, seeing as how it's so fragile. That was essentially my assertion.
Yeah. Boy. And what has he done as far as any defense in this lawsuit? What has he said?
He continues to shirk the responsibility onto his client when
No. What has he said? I mean, he had to answer the complaint, and if you're heading towards summary judgment,
the answers were super flimsy to me. I mean, I don't have
well,
them before
what,
me.
Yep, but I'm asking
you,
what did he say?
Okay.
You know, sometimes our perceptions can be skewed by our desires. I'm not saying yours are, but I'm saying sometimes that
problem.
Can happen.
I'm logical. I get it's possible, right? I just wonder.
Yeah. I'm just trying to get an idea what he, you know, what kind of defense he's put up to this.
I'm sorry. I'll hop off. I'll find what I need, and then I'll hop back in the queue and see if you can take me.
Okay.
Okay.
All righty. Thank you. Yeah, we just want to get a little more information so we have an idea, you know, even what kind of ideas we can give you. All right. We'll come back to you. Okay. We're going to go to 305. You've been unmuted. Go ahead. Hello, 305. That's down in Florida. Somebody must be sleeping. All right, we're going to move on. We're going to go to 281 down in Texas.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing good. How are you?
Good. I'm in a lawsuit over a credit card debt, and their entire case is based on an affidavit that someone who supposedly has firsthand knowledge created an affidavit, and it's account stated, and supposedly they don't have to show a contract. Well, they don't have a contract. And I was searching on the website on information on how to do with account stated claims, and any legal information that could be shared with me about that, or you could point me in the direction of a webinar I could listen to.
John's got some information on that.
Yeah,
as
John
well
does,
as
yeah.
Jesse. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
John?
What exactly is the question with discovery?
He's asking about account stated. He's got a credit card lawsuit against him on account stated.
They have no contract.
Go ahead and give a quick description to John, if you would. John was multitasking. That happens to some of us.
They have no contract. Went before the judge. She said it's account stated. They don't need to have one. They're basing their entire case on an affidavit that somebody for their original creditor who supposedly had firsthand knowledge of my account gave to him. I Googled the affiant. He didn't even work for the original creditor for the first 8 years my account was open. That could be a problem. But the account stated thing, I was reading online about there's ways around that or there's ways to defend against it, against their claim of it. Just wondering what webinar would touch on that. I was listening like crazy the other day trying to find one that said something about it.
Well, there's one where I address all – there's a series that I address all of them. I can't remember what they're called off the top of my head. But when you go in there, it talks about beating credit card lawsuits against you and how to do the motions to dismiss and a proper answer with affirmative defenses and another motion to dismiss and a third motion to dismiss, how to set them up for FTCPA violations and dealing with, you know, a breach of contract and an account stated. Account stated is easier because there's no contract. One of the first things you could look for is if they're looking to recoup attorney's fees, are they?
I don't know yet. I don't know yet. I went through the first motion to dismiss, and the judge denied it.
You need to read the complaint to find out if they're asking for attorney's fees.
Right.
You need to read the complaint carefully and know
what's
in there.
Yes, they are. They are, yeah.
All right.
Okay. Where in the agreement does it state that they're entitled to attorney's fees?
That's
the question.
Well, they can't just state it because that has to be shown.
Right.
Yes.
Costs, attorney's fees, venue, all that stuff has to be shown.
So I'm going to draft up my FDCPA complaint, and on the affidavit, there are five people from the original creditor that signed it. Can I include each one of those five in, as a count?
Signed what? Signed what?
Signed the affidavit.
Five
Multiple
people signed
signer.
One affidavit, or are there five separate affidavits?
It's one affidavit. Five people from the original creditor.
No.
Yeah, how does that work?
No.
How can five people have exact same knowledge unless they all sat in the same seat in the same classroom for the entire year?
And made up the story together.
Right. It doesn't work like that. And so, therefore, one of the things you could do, and, you know, perhaps you're not in a position to do it, but if you were able to depose those five individuals and find out, can they recant things exactly the same? All five of them.
If even one of them doesn't, the whole thing's out.
Right.
That's the problem in Texas in the justice courts. There's no depositions allowed. And I posted a
question
on the form and Dave answered.
No,
that's not
true.
I don't know.
I answered that
stuff
in the forum, and you can do discovery. And I explained. I even put a copy of the rules in there. Did you go look at it?
Yes, I have my motion for discovery ready to go.
There you go.
But the judge told me to my face, we don't allow depositions. I asked her. I wanted to depose the affiant. She said, we don't allow
that. You can do written deposition.
Okay.
You have to understand when you asked the judge that, you weren't following the rules.
Yeah.
You do it in the proper way. You got to do the motion.
Okay. Yeah.
And then
if
they say no, then you can argue it, and it's appealable.
And remember, you got to do your motion, and then you got to motion for a hearing on the motion.
Yeah,
unless you
yeah.
cause the judge to look at the motion, they don't do anything. He'll ignore you.
Yeah. Okay, and in my FDCPA complaint, I can sue the attorney for the law firm that was there, the law firm, and the original creditor?
You can't sue an original creditor.
Okay,
not under FDCPA.
You can sue the attorney and the law firm. Are you sure it's an original creditor?
Don't know. That's one of the things the judge told me. Says, you want to know who owns the debt, don't you? I said, yeah.
And you're entitled to know that.
He said, that's not what we're here for today. So.
No,
yeah.
That's what you're not there for today, but you have to do it through the proper discovery process. You have to motion for discovery. If they need a reason to give you why you need discovery, you need to know who the, you know, current owner of the alleged debt is, how they
yeah.
acquired it, how much it, you know. And so I know you want to do your FDCPA lawsuit, but you're in the game right now. You can be doing that on the side. If you get into the webinars that I did, it shows you the discovery that you need to do in this case that you're in. Because if the judge grants it, you need to have that in the mail the next day, because as soon as they grant discovery, the other side's going to be propounding discovery on you. And you're going to be on, what the hell, what do I do? So if you have your discovery ready to go in the mail, before
yeah.
you receive it from the other side, you're going to be thinking a lot straighter. And the discovery that's on the website shows you how to set them up with the appropriate questions for FDCPA violations. And you may
yeah.
find out that there's another debt buyer that's there that you don't know about, and you'll find out that the attorney is a real party in interest because they put up the money for the lawsuit, and they're a contingency attorney. That means they're part owner in the debt, and they're in violation, which you
yeah.
can really slam with, and they don't want that out there about themselves. So,
and hey, John,
mm-hmm.
he shouldn't forget to ask who they're going to call as their witness.
Yeah, you need to get a witness list, but that's a little further. But right now, once they get this discovery, a lot of times they want to go away at that point and dismiss.
Yeah,
so,
I'm thinking in terms of as soon as they have a witness list, that gives him the right to depose.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I have my discovery ready to go. I just have to motion the court for discovery. And
where did you get
that
the discovery?
On the website.
Okay. Did you get
the
it out of the
discovery seminar, the webinars on discovery, yes.
You did the one on defending lawsuits, right? Not the discovery for suing them.
Yeah, as a defendant, yes.
Okay, perfect. All right, then you've found the area when I've covered all these different things for when you're being sued.
I'll just
good.
Go over the beaten credit cards webinar for the account stated thing, too. I know it's in there somewhere.
Okay.
I started listening to it.
I did a series of like 5 or 6 webinars on it. So.
Yeah. Did they put anything in there that shows that you had an ongoing and continuing relationship with them?
No, not at all. No.
Then how can it be account stated?
Yeah, no kidding.
I guess that's for them. It's the easiest way to get a default.
No,
judgment
that's a request. There are 3 legs, and that's one of them that they absolutely have to show that you have an ongoing existing relationship with them. Otherwise, there can be no account stated.
Right.
Okay.
If
yeah.
you look up in your state rules to see the elements of account stated, it'll show you the 3 things that they have to prove to have a claim against you. And those are the 3 things you have to attack.
Yeah, I
yeah,
covered that.
I found that on the internet,
too.
Yeah. I found okay. that much on the internet, yeah, okay. So.
Yeah, but
okay,
that was according to Texas rules.
I don't know. I have to go back and look at that. Yeah.
Yeah. You need to narrow it down to the scope of the Texas rules.
Yeah.
And I pose that question because that's critical.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
The
I'll
chances
do that.
Are
I'll
they
that.
Didn't, and chances are they can.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Did that take care
okay.
of your questions?
It sure did. Thanks very much. I appreciate it.
All right. You're very welcome. All right, we're going to go, a little farther north in Texas. We're going to go to 817. That's right up here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Well, I hear
would
the clunking.
That be me?
I don't know, but I heard the clunking. Go ahead.
Well, I'm not certain if you've got me or not.
I've got you. That's why I'm talking
okay.
to you.
Okay, now I got confirmation. One of your moderators knows who I am. I'm James.
James.
And I've got a question for you. Does due process of law apply in a common law court of equity? Then at the beginning of the show, somebody was making the comments about the letter, and they said, we'll remove your number from the system. What system are they talking about? Is that an automatic system?
Who knows? It doesn't matter.
Don't know.
No, that doesn't have anything to do with the phone calls. The phone calls have already been made.
It does if that system is
no,
a robocall system.
Yeah, he's actually got what he's trying to throw you a bone.
I understand that, but I've already got the evidence of the call, so for me that's
not an
issue. But
what was making the calls? Was it somebody on their fingers, or was it an automatic system?
Yeah.
They said the number would be removed from the system. What system?
Well,
that's the question.
I understand your question.
Yeah.
Now the other thing is, I was hearing about the lady in the third-party check. We're dealing with the maker. And I agree with you. I didn't hear why the maker dishonored the check. What was the grounds for the maker dishonoring the check?
That information was not provided.
And I agree with that. But everybody needs to understand who is the maker, which is the obligor on the check, to an obligee, and that obligee assigned their rights to another obligee. These are your tangible obligees. Now, the other thing I heard was about the stock market, and we're going to deal with a lot of these synthetic intangibles. They are legal, but they are not sustainable, and that's what's happening to the stock market right now. So as I heard, a couple of you guys are traders. What's this going to do to the long and shorts of people trying to squeeze the nickel out of a turnip when the turnip's already dead?
I have no idea what you mean.
I don't either. I'm sorry. I know. The turnip's
buried
been dead
my turnip
for
a
long time.
Ago.
Yeah.
Well,
I'll let y'all go on that one.
Yeah, I'm strictly talking about the economic situation in this country is going to deteriorate substantially.
It's not just the economics in this country. It's globally.
Yeah,
well,
it's everywhere.
Yeah, but we don't live globally. We live here. That's what I'm referring to. You are correct. It is going to be global. But we're talking about your neighborhood, those people that are on this call, the United States.
Oh, yeah. They're going to suffer if they've got their money in buying into these intangible payment streams, the general intangibles. And if you get into the Uniform Commercial Code, you'll begin to understand that, because then you're getting into UCC 8 and 9. And when you're getting into mortgages and so forth like this, they're trying to use UCC Article 9, which applies to the intangible obligee. They're trying to stretch those rights to the tangible obligor or the homeowner. It don't stretch that far.
Yeah, well, we're getting way afield of what we cover on this call, so.
Okay, I'll let y'all guys go, and I'm going to listen for a while.
All righty. Thank you so much.
All right, bye.
Okay, and let's see. We're going to go to, I'm going to try 305 and see whether we're going to get somebody on 305 this time.
Hello?
305.
Can you hear me?
Trying to get somebody. There we go.
Can
go
you
ahead.
Hear me?
Yep, we
can
hear you. Go ahead.
Okay. I just wanted to find out what constitutes a. I know you guys. I'm just new to the whole program. I just want to find out what constitutes a relationship with the credit card company when they call you like multiple times in a given day, like 6 or 7 times. I never gave them verbal permission to call me on my cell. So I needed to know. I know some reading over their website, it says about I have a verbal relationship with them to give them permission to call you.
Well, it's not a verbal relationship. It's a business relationship.
Okay.
Because
so,
consent can be given orally or in writing, or even literally through a voicemail or a phone call or a text or an email.
Okay, but I never gave them any type of permission whatsoever, written, orally, verbally, whatever.
Did you give them the phone number?
I gave them the phone number on my application, I'm pretty sure.
Then
there
you gave them consent.
Right.
Oh, okay, all right. So they have permission to go ahead.
Withdraw it.
Yeah, you can withdraw it. In the new FCC ruling, states very clearly that consent can be withdrawn in any reasonable way at any time. In other words, you could send them an email, you can call them, you can write them a letter and say, quit calling me, and that's it. And it's
okay,
effective
so
the moment you do that.
All right, so if they call in, I pick up the phone and answer the call, and I just let them talk, and I just basically tell them, well, I want you to quit calling me. Is that the same process?
Like I said, the FCC, in their declaratory ruling from July 10th, said consent can be withdrawn in any reasonable way at any time. In other words, you telling them on the phone, don't call me, that's reasonable, isn't it?
Yeah, I just wanted to double check. You guys are better at this than me, so I just wanted to know. All right, and one other question, I'm not going to hold anybody else up. What's the length of time in terms of possibly getting paid once everything goes through? Is it a 30-day process, or just depends on the process?
What do you mean, when everything goes through? I have no idea what you're referring to.
Well, I mean, I know you guys are referring to a phone call, like maybe $1,000 per call or text.
Oh, you're talking about as far as if you go after somebody and you have a settlement?
Right.
That's going to vary from situation to situation because it depends on who you're dealing with. Some companies, when you reach a settlement, will want to pay you in 30 days. Some of them, I've literally been paid the next day. And others, I've had them try and stretch it out a month. I actually had one that, because of a situation, major situation they got themselves into, I had to wait 3.5 months to get paid because they just didn't have the money. But that's all negotiable.
Okay.
So there is no normal to that.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. Appreciate it, guys. Thank you very much.
All right. You're welcome.
All right.
Okay. Now we're going to go to another 305. And you have been unmuted, 305-766.
Can you hear me, guys?
Yes, we got you loud and clear. Go ahead.
All right, this is Jonathan. Good to talk with you again. Just a real quick question here. If Wells Fargo Home Mortgage obtained the mortgage by succession after default, are they considered a debt collector?
Okay, what now?
Jesse?
Repeat the question. That's what I'm trying.
If Wells Fargo Home Mortgage obtained the mortgage by succession after default, are they still considered a debt collector?
So the successors in interest? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, you know how they did the merger? They merged.
Yeah,
who
did they get it from? Yeah, see, if they did a merger, no, because they would still remain, you know, the original creditor per se. There's just a case that came out and explains it. Huh?
All right, I need that case. Because Wells Fargo Bank N.A. was the originating lender.
Right.
And they Wells Fargo Home Mortgage obtained by succession, which to me, you know, I don't believe it. You know, Wells Fargo Home Mortgage is a servicer.
Exactly.
But they're claiming that they obtained the mortgage by succession. But I'm like,
well,
I mean,
meaning that Wells Fargo N.A. ate up Wells Fargo. You're not going to get it. Trust me on this, you're not going to get it. If it would have been, you know, Carrington Mortgage or NLS or any one of the other major servicers that took that debt while under default, I'd say, half at it, go eat them up. But since it's Wells Fargo and Wells Fargo, you're going to lose.
But if they change their name, doesn't that make them subject to FDCPA?
No. Nope. It does if you change your name, meaning you've stopped the corporation, but if you're still within the merger, it's yours. Capital One, HSBC, that case that just was out last week, it absolutely defines it. They're still collecting their very own debt. They're not out collecting anybody else's debt.
Exactly.
See, that's the problem. That's the point, Larry, that everybody gets confused with. They're collecting their very own debt. They're not collecting your debt or servicer on behalf of somebody else like a trust or a securitized trust. So... That's the key. That's the key right there.
Yeah,
but you got to be careful.
That's why I wanted to ask, because Wells Fargo N.A., they assigned it to Wells Fargo Home Mortgage. Then it went to Well, that's the default they signed for. But now they're saying that they absorbed them, so now it's back to the original creditor. So it would not be considered
a
debt collection.
Yeah. It just, yeah. I don't know if you've read the case or not. What's the name of that case? I don't even think you have it handy. It just came out. That was the 11th.
That was Davidson.
Yeah. Davidson against whom, do you recall?
Oh, God. I'm drawing a mental blank.
You went on the 11th Circuit?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, when, oh, 11th. I'm thinking, yeah, that was a Cap 1, wasn't it?
Cap 1.
Yeah.
Yeah, Davis, Davidson versus Cap 1 Bank N.A.
Yeah. And the 11th affirmed exactly what I'm just saying. That's what I'm telling you. You know, it's just, you got to, there's always that fine line there. You just got, that's all, it's not a big deal. It's just got to be understood, you know?
Well, I mean, they could still fall under FCCPA, though.
In Florida? Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. Jonathan.
Okay.
That they're not getting out of, buddy.
And if I could find some TCPA stuff and some SCRA, I may have a little pot going.
Yeah. So what? If you don't get them under FDCPA, you get them under the FCCPA. Who cares? You still get them.
And the FDCPA F6, if they were trying to force a security instrument.
Magic Johnny comes through.
But it's through a non-judicial action, so they have to come and, like, threaten you or something like that without filing a lawsuit.
Yeah.
You can find some violation. You know, if they send someone to your house and you're afraid they're going to break in and steal your stuff or put you out without having a right to do so.
All right, beautiful. Appreciate you guys. I'll get back in the queue and keep listening.
There you go.
Thank you.
Who's next?
David?
I said this stupid board is slow
ticking,
as
is it?
Crap tonight. I'd tell you. Let's go to, we got another 305. What is with, I'm going to try this 305 again. That didn't answer before. I'm going to see if there's anybody there. If
yes, I'm here.
There you are.
I didn't answer before because I was on the other line with the client. So I do apologize for that. On Thursday I have the hearing before the judge regarding discovery, and I just wanted to know if you guys had any pointers for me or anything that I should be looking out for. That would help me in preparation for the hearing.
Well, the first thing I'll
tell
you is when you go to a hearing, make sure you take all your documents with you, anything that could possibly be asked for that you'd want to
Well, it's a telephonic hearing.
Okay, well, yeah.
Oh, it's a telephonic. Oh, okay. All right. Obviously,
Maria?
That doesn't apply then.
Maria, if I can make a suggestion to you.
Yes.
And I played the recordings back for the last 3 or 4 calls when you were on.
I have. I've actually been listening to those.
I think
repeatedly.
That's going to be the best thing that we could offer you because I think we've given you everything we can.
And Maria, I've been there on those. And just make sure that you really know really well the reasons why what you're asking for is relevant, will lead or may lead to admissible information, because you want to be ready when the judge, when the other side gives him a bunch of crap about, well, Your Honor, that's confidential, that's trade secret, blah, blah, blah. She couldn't have any real need for that. And the judge says to you, can you explain to me exactly how what you're asking for is relevant to the allegations in your complaint? Make sure you can answer that and answer it well.
Okay.
Yeah,
right.
Terry, but before Maria, before I would answer anything like that, if the judge or she were to say to me if they're trade secrets or the client privilege, I would say, ma'am, you can't just say it's client privilege. As per rules, you have to show me the privilege log. So please quit saying that.
Well, that's one of the things, because my hearing is basically on the motion to compel. I asked for, hold on, let me just pull it up really quick.
Did you do for an in-camera, in the alternative, an in-camera review by any chance?
Yes, I did. I asked for an in-camera review. I asked for a whole bunch of stuff. Hold on, just give me 1 second.
Yeah, because if that's the case, you could say, you know what, we can't figure this out, Your Honor, let her submit everything to you. We've asked for the in-camera review, and we'll just go from there.
I put everything into one motion because it was just a little bit too much for me to do individual motions. So I went ahead and did everything in one motion, and my motion basically was I tried to do it as comprehensive as possible, and I asked, hold on, here we go. I asked the court to give me, I have, okay, 1 second, I'm pulling it up now. Okay, I asked the court to give me, to provide adequate answers to requests for admissions, blah, 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 strike all objected answers and compel Bayview to answer all interrogatories, provide unredacted documents pursuant to request production, da-da, produce all documents in connection to produce that, provide archive and recording for all calls, respond to remaining requests based upon email sent to Exhibit H, provide privilege log for all documents being claimed under privilege, conduct an in-camera review for such documents to determine privilege status, not allow Bayview to use semantic games to answer discoverable information, and in the event that the court deems that I have exceeded my interrogatories, to expand the interrogatories propounded on June 24th. All the stuff that I requested in my wherefore clause for my motion to compel. I think it was pretty comprehensive.
Sounds like it.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there
so,
you go.
No,
just don't let
like Harry said,
with nonsense.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. Know why what you're asking for, and be able to articulate it well to the court.
Okay.
Yeah. How it's
sure.
going to lead, how it's going to lead to the discovery of admissible evidence, or how it could be admissible evidence. And to answer that question, make sure you read through the Federal Rules of Evidence, which are very short compared to the Civil Procedure Rules. Read through the Federal Rules of Evidence and know what is admissible and what is not admissible as evidence, and it also shows you how to object to things there. So,
yeah, now I want to reiterate Maria, what John just said, one very important thing, make sure that you understand. It's not necessarily that what you ask for is relevant, but could lead to the discovery of evidence that's relevant. Make sure you cover that base, okay?
Okay. Okay, well, actually, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Definitely very good information. Terry, thank you so much. That actually put a lot of clarity into how I should proceed in preparing for it, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, be prepared to dazzle the judge because you can, and you'll be amazed how easily you get what you need from that judge when you show him, you know, that's smoke and mirrors, Your Honor. This is exactly why I'm asking for this and this and this, and this is what it has to do with my allegations.
Okay.
There you go. Go get them.
All righty.
All righty. Thank you. Okay. We're going to go to, oh, my goodness. I'm going to try and go here. Boy, this board is screwy tonight. I believe we have Keisha on the line.
Hey, guys.
I was right. Good evening, Keisha.
Good evening. I just have a quick question for clarity. When Jesse just made the comment to the guy that was on previously regarding Wells Fargo Bank NA and Wells Fargo Home Mortgage, now I just want to make sure that I heard it clearly because the phone was kind of going in and out. If now, since Wells Fargo Bank N.A. Came into the picture after the fact with me, it wouldn't apply with them not going, with me not going for FDCPA. But if they were originally involved, then it wouldn't. I mean, then it would apply, and I wouldn't be able to go after them. Because I think I just got confused because I was like, wait a minute. So my mortgage started with Prime Lending, and Wells Fargo Bank N.A. didn't show up until the initiation for foreclosure proceedings. But Wells Fargo Home Mortgage has been my servicer since about 2 months after I got my loan.
Okay, so what's your question?
So, no, I'm just trying to get clarity on it wouldn't apply to my case because they weren't in from the beginning. Is that why it's applying to him? Because it was kind of going in and out.
It's applying to him because it's Wells Fargo and Wells Fargo. They just absorbed it.
No,
it's
what
not,
I'm saying is it
listen,
because he had them at the beginning?
No, it's because it's Wells Fargo and Wells Fargo from the beginning. But it's not from the beginning. He had N.A. They transferred it over to Home Loan. Home Loan then went out of business and got absorbed back by N.A.
Okay, that's what I was saying. So he's had Wells Fargo Bank N.A. previously, and then they took it to somebody
right.
else.
Correct.
Okay. Okay, so
it was NationStar or somebody else collecting for Wells Fargo that took it under the debt. Now that meets the definition. They're collecting the debt for somebody else.
Okay, okay. So because I started with a different lender and Wells Fargo Home Mortgage was just my servicer, it wouldn't apply to me with what I'm doing.
Exactly.
I mean, I still can go after them with FDCPA.
Exactly.
Okay, okay, that's what I just wanted to make sure, because I was like, wait a minute, I think I just got confused. So, okay, wonderful.
We don't want you confused.
No, because I'm like, I just did all that paperwork for you to respond to this motion to dismiss, and I'm like, oh my goodness, now wait a minute.
Yeah, no, you're fine.
Okay, all right, thank you.
All righty, thank you, dear. All right. Let's see. Well, we have 541. You've been unmuted. Go ahead. 541, we're not hearing you. You've been unmuted. You need
okay,
to talk
can you
to
hear
us.
Me? Hello?
There we go. Yep, you're on.
Okay. I'm trying to find out. I've had some phone calls to my cell phone and some text messages. I have a Oregon phone number, but I live in California. This is my cell phone. Would I file for private action under the Oregon phone number or the California?
I don't understand what you mean.
Okay, let me rephrase that.
Well, go ahead.
Okay, I live in California, but my cell phone has an Oregon number.
That
Oregon
where the number is doesn't matter. It's where you are
okay.
that matters.
Okay.
If
okay,
you're,
that makes
if you're in Oregon, right?
No, I'm in California. I have an Oregon
okay,
phone
you're
number.
You're in California. Okay. When you bring an action, you're going to bring that action in California, even if you had a Pennsylvania or a Florida number.
Okay. Okay. And
in your local jurisdiction there.
Okay. Okay, one more thing. I have a attorney that is wanting to settle with me for, which I'll probably take. They've offered it. I work during the day, and I don't have time to do a whole lot of paperwork. I hope that one day I will be, but they're offering me $3,500, and we're pretty close to, we filed a motion to dismiss right after the pre-trial scheduling conference. And they're telling me that they want me to go in and settle with them. And I'm wondering if I should go ahead and file a opposition to the motion to dismiss, or just trust them that we're going to get this thing handled.
Don't ever trust them.
Okay.
Okay. Don't ever trust them. If they want to get it done, get it done, and then you can do a motion, a stipulated motion to dismiss, but only after you have a signed settlement agreement.
Okay.
Because okay,
well,
the
think...
thing is, well, you know, if they can get you to dismiss the case and then they start screwing around, then what would you have to do? You'd have to go back in and refile your case and everything. No, you always make sure that you have your settlement agreement done. You tell them, as soon as we have a signed settlement agreement, I will file a notice of settlement with the court. And in my particular jurisdiction, where I am, and I don't know, you might want to check with your court clerk, but here we are required to file a notice of settlement as soon as we have a settlement, and then that way the court knows, oh, these guys have reached an agreement. Okay, we don't need to waste any more time on this. We don't need to schedule any more stuff. And I never do the motion to dismiss until I've got the check. That's the way I do it. But check with your clerk as to the procedure that they require, whether they want you to do a notice of settlement to make the court aware. If you can do that, then I highly recommend that you don't dismiss the case until after you receive the settlement proceeds, because sometimes you'll find that they'll screw around and screw around paying you. And that's something that's hanging over their head. If, you know, you want this case dismissed, better get me a check. Use that leverage.
Right. Okay, thank you so much. Keep up the good work, and you guys have a great evening.
All right, you too. Thank you very much. All right, let's go to 770. You have been unmuted. Go ahead.
Hey, guys.
Good evening.
A little birdie told me Jesse's done an in-bank review.
What?
Have you done an in-bank review with the court?
In camera, not in-bank.
Oh, okay. Has anybody done an in-bank review?
You know what that is?
It's when you are, it's related to the appeals. I was told to do one.
En banc. It's appeals.
En banc, yes, it's French. It's, in essence, I'm disputing what the 11th Circuit has said, and I'm going to, going to the judges and say, please review this.
Oh, yeah, I did one of those earlier this year.
Okay.
Or the 11th on my wife's case.
Well,
they didn't care. They didn't even respond to it.
They did. You had to file a petition first, right? Petition,
yeah,
to ask them.
They don't care. I'm telling you, don't waste your time. I'm just telling you, don't waste your time. The 11th is the biggest bunch of scumbags you've ever seen.
Yeah, we all know. The other issue is because they have violated all these laws and are forcing me into Florida, and I was dealing with the 11th Circuit, they dismissed, I asked for more time for the motion dismissed while I was dealing with the 11th Circuit. In the meantime, well, whatever. What happened was the judge said you were supposed to respond to motion dismissed, you didn't, and so now it's going unopposed. So what kind of, the only thing I'm going to have is being able to do a reconsideration or objection to the judge's order now, right, depending on what he says? I mean, they're forcing me into the Florida court.
Okay. I don't know.
It's FDCPA, Jesse. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I know the background of your cases. They can force you into Florida for your property because that's the jurisdiction. It's here. The property's here.
This
but FDCPA, they can't force you into Florida. They cannot.
that.
Well,
thing.
If you got
disagree?
A corrupt judge, they can.
Well,
how
I'm,
they can? How can they do that?
Well, there is nothing in the law. I mean, I've got two laws, not only 1692I, but
court.
I have. Huh?
There isn't a court in Florida that has jurisdiction over your case.
Exactly.
You don't live here. You're not a resident of, or a citizen of the state of Florida.
Yes, exactly right. And they don't care, right? So
well,
I
the
am
other
staying
side
out
has
of
arguing. Yeah, yeah.
Huh?
The other side has been arguing that your case is related to the property and the court's buying into it.
Exactly.
Well, the Supreme Court says that the debt is absolutely irrelevant to an FDCPA violation. Have you told them this? Have you showed them the case?
Yeah, and I've given
it's
enough.
All over our website 50 times, the Supreme Court, not your middle district or your little Peasley or meager 11th Circuit, the Supreme Court says this.
I don't know which cases I put in. See, the only thing I've got in there is my complaint. And
yeah,
both-
Sherry. No, well, then you got to stop them because all you got to do is say, listen, the debt has absolutely nothing to do with the violation. Whether the debt's valid or not is irrelevant. You're allowing them to get you down in there.
Oh, no, no, no. No, I haven't fought it every step of the way, but the judges are only listening to, they are only seeing what the attorneys have put in, and it's all about foreclosure. Even though I have never mentioned foreclosure once, I have only mentioned behavior and conduct, I have never mentioned the debt, and there's evidence to back up everything I've said. And they don't care. And now, you know, after 4 months of a simple complaint, FDCPA complaint, they're throwing everything out of the 11th Circuit after giving me two cases, and I'm either going to do an in-bank review or going to the chief judge, but I'm doing something. I'm not stopping. This is absurd. They're violating the law, and, you know, I'm going to hold them to it. I've had it. It's enough. Enough's enough.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
But I don't know.
Agree.
I haven't done anything except file a non-consent to transfer and copy of the appeal into the 11th, into the Florida court and ask. Oh no, they did make me do a case management conference, and I haven't responded.
Well, if you go to the 11th. Make sure you. I got to give you that Supreme Court case because I cite it.
Yep.
And the 11th even has a couple decisions that way. So all they're doing is muddying the God almighty, this freaking 11th. I can't stand those people.
Well, I mean, the clerks...
They're absolutely the worst, man.
They can't even do their... The clerks can't even do their job. You know what a mess they made of everything.
Yeah, well, they made a mess out of my wife's case, too. So, yeah, it's terrible. Those guys are absolutely horrible.
So I'm going to hold them all to it, one way or another.
Hmm.
Is it on the site, or do you just have it in your file?
No, I have it all in my file. I'd have to dig it up. I can find it, I'm sure. Give me a day or so, and I'll put it on there. It's not that hard.
Where are you going to put it? Where in the site will you put it?
I'll put it in the Florida. I'm going to write this down. In the Florida pleading section.
Okay. All right. So how should I stay out of jurisdiction of the Florida court right now?
Huh?
How can I stay out of the Florida court?
I don't know. I don't know how you got in there to begin with. Once you're in, you're in. I mean, you can't, you know. I would move to dismiss the whole thing for lack of jurisdiction.
Well, they already did that. The judge in Florida moved to the 11th Circuit and divested himself of jurisdiction and said my whole case needed to be in appeals. And then when they dropped the appeal, they said, oh, now you have to answer. I go, what? I'm not giving up on this. I've got a motion for reconsideration. And, I mean, it was just, oh, I mean, I just
don't
know.
I don't know.
It's definitely
I really
a challenge.
I don't know.
Let me tell you.
Yeah, I don't know all the details, but you'll drive yourself stupid with that stuff.
Yeah.
Trust me.
Well,
hey,
Jeff,
we're hearing your chirping in the background. Can you mute, please?
Sorry.
Chirping?
Jeff
Who's
is
chirping?
Yeah, haven't you heard all that noise, Jesse?
He's
He's got
is he
something
not
running that runs there, and it's chirping. Go ahead.
No. I just wondered how the best way to. We all know FDCPA is either filed where you sign the contract or where you live. Period. You don't run all over the country to sue these debt collectors. Coming after us, illegally.
Right.
And yet I'm sitting with this situation fighting personal jurisdiction and venue. Really? But
yeah,
they
have what the deal is with that.
They've gotten the judges to believe it's a foreclosure, so it's where the property is, of course. That's what they've done. They've hoodwinked the judge.
Well,
and
I can't imagine. If you cited the case that I've given you that's on the site, that's the Supreme Court of the United States, there's no way in hell you'd have gotten this far. Period.
I didn't cite any cases because I just did my pleading. Other than my objection.
But you had to respond to their pleadings, Sherry. You can't just
tell me. Oh, my objection. Yes, right.
Obviously, then they're stomping your head in because you haven't done anything.
No. I forgot. Yes, I did put stuff in there.
Yeah. I know you have. I know you better than that.
Yeah. I'll have to look and see if I know I used the Supreme Court rulings for this, but I was only dealing with, with failure to state a claim, and I didn't have any issue with that because I just threw it out the window.
Yeah, that's normal. Yeah.
It's not a foreclosure. It was the venue and personal jurisdiction I was running down their rabbit holes with and trying to find all this case law. And, of course, I have case law all over the place saying that it only takes one letter from out of state. I mean, it's not a dip. I researched this up and down, and just like you guys have heard it, and everybody else that was trying to help me said, this is absurd. You shouldn't have to be doing this at all. None of this makes any sense to anybody. So I just have to make sure I don't voluntarily give them jurisdiction without realizing it.
Yeah, you got a real odd deal there. You really do. All right.
It's
well,
not
right?
Even,
answer your question.
My name's not on anything. I mean, they can't read. They don't read. I mean, it's amazing. It really is. It's truly amazing. Okay,
truly
I will look for the Supreme Court cases, Jesse. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
All righty.
I'm trying to find it. It's driving me nuts. I can't stand the 11th Circuit.
Yeah, I know you're not fond of them.
No.
Boy, this
I'm not
board
fond of them at all.
Is really slow.
Hey, listen, my internet is doing the same thing. It's absolutely doing the same thing.
It's really, really wild. No, believe
hey,
it
baby.
Or not. Yeah, I clicked to mute Sherry, and it muted her, and then it unmuted her without me doing a thing. That's pretty cool. All right. And it just unmuted her again. I'm not touching a thing. That's pretty interesting. How about 973? Let's see if we can get you unmuted. And it's not wanting to do that either.
Hello?
Okay. 973.
Can you hear me?
Go ahead. Yep, we got
you. Hi, this is Louisa. How are you?
Pretty good.
I have a question. I have a case management conference after I have accepted my answer for my foreclosure complaint. My question is, shouldn't I start sending the plaintiff about my discovery, or should I wait until the case management, the judge will order it?
What do your rules say? Always got to follow the rules.
The rules.
Yep.
I got to wait for the
management. You got to look at your rules. Yeah, you got to look at your rules for discovery, when you can propound discovery. That's what guides when you can do it.
I see. And the other question is, I was checking on the website about the discoveries question and admission and production of document, but I only found about credit card. Where can I find for foreclosures?
That's in the saving your home section.
Yeah.
All the foreclosure stuff is in the saving your home section.
Saving your home. Okay, so I will check it out. Thank you so much.
You're very
okay.
Welcome.
Yeah, Dave, give me a second. This is just for Sherry. For Sherry. It says, this is on the counterclaim because it just, and this is one of the ones I just jumped off. This is the 11th Circuit, Sherry. I had to find it because I know I use it against him. An FDCPA claim has nothing to do with whether the underlying debt is valid. And an FDCPA claim concerns the method of collecting the debt. It does not arise out of the transaction creating the debt. And that's Azar versus Hayter, which is A-Z-A-R versus H-A-Y-T-E-R. Refusing to find a waiver if the FDCPA claim is a compulsory counterclaim to state court action on the debt because the claim does not arise out of the transaction creating the debt and thus was not a compulsory claim, and it was affirmed by the 11th Circuit in 1995.
There you go. That doesn't get much clearer than that, does it?
What was that one again, Jesse?
Azar.
How do you spell that?
A-Z-A-R versus Hayter, H-A-Y-T-E-R.
And it was the 11th what year?
You got it, 95.
95, thank you.
Yeah, because it's just that simple. They have nothing to do with the validity of that underlying debt. And, of course, it can't. Because a debt collector, I can call John and say, hey, this is Jesse with Peckerhead Debt Collector Service. You owe me $1,000. Well, I just violated the FDCPA, and he doesn't owe me anything because there is no debt there. But I still violated the FDCPA and the FCCPA and probably a few other laws. But my point is that I can do that, and there's no debt even required to violate the FDCPA. That makes sense? It's all it has to do is with the method. Remember that. Nothing more. That's it. End of story. So does everybody got that? Sherry, you got that? Want to make sure you got it.
Yep.
Azar versus Hayter.
All right. I want to mention if anybody else has got questions, hit the one key on the keypad on your phone. If we don't have any more people to jump in, I guess maybe we'll close up shop a little early tonight. It is summertime, and it's late summer, and I know a lot of people are getting things done. So, you know, the crowd does thin out a little bit, and if we're going to be done early, that's okay. As long as we've helped everybody. Well, me too. I got laundry I got to do yet tonight. But I don't see anybody else popping up here. So I guess we're going to go ahead and wrap things up for tonight. As far as the call schedule goes, I haven't looked because we're doing this rather abruptly. Who is doing the webinar tomorrow at 3 o'clock in the afternoon?
I have no idea. John is.
John is. And what are you covering tomorrow,
credit
John?
Beating credit cards open discussion.
There you go. All right. Be there, 3 o'clock Eastern. That's your chance to talk to John about the beating credit card stuff. And keep in mind, the Wednesday webinars, like the others, the Q&A, all the questions and stuff, have to stay on point on that subject matter. So it's not going to be taking foreclosure questions and stuff like that. Then, of course, tomorrow night is Terry's call. That starts at 8 o'clock. If you are not on Terry's email list, send a email to queensongbird@gmail.com. Simply say, please put me on the list. That's all you have to do. It's quick and easy. And do it now. Don't wait until tomorrow afternoon or tomorrow evening because it'll be too late for you to get the reminder. Again, her call starts at 8 o'clock Eastern. Then, of course, the rest of the week through the weekend, for all of the members, you have the forum to use and study from. Use the forum. Please make sure you stay on subject. If you're asking a foreclosure question, put it in the Saving Your Home section of the forum. If you're talking about beating credit cards, make sure you put it in that thing. Don't get careless and mix them up, it gets confusing for people. It is a great place to study. There's 4.5 years worth of questions and answers. There's a virtual treasure trove of information there. So that's a resource all in itself to study from, and you can do it by subject matter. Then, of course, next Monday is Dallas Debt Discussion. That starts at 9 o'clock Eastern. That's still on TalkShoe.com. The pin for that call is 54318. We are in our seventh year. We're always there on Monday nights. I haven't missed a Monday night in over 6 years. So I'd like to thank everybody for joining us tonight. We answered a bunch of good questions for people tonight, and I hope everybody has had a great summer. We're winding things up, and I know that the crowds on the calls are going to start getting larger into the fall. And then, of course, next Tuesday night, we're having a webinar. And, Jesse, what are we covering on that webinar? See, I'm going to pin him down so he's got to come up with the information. Or did he skip on us? Jesse, you're muted if you're talking to us. He may have gotten bumped off. But anyway, we... No, Jesse is here and he's unmuted. He's just playing hooky. But the bottom line is, next week there is a webinar. It is not an open call. And I hope everybody will join Terry tomorrow night on her call. If you've got questions, bring them on. That's what we're here for. But these calls are not a substitute for being a member of the website. So if you are not a member, I don't know what to say. It's risk-free, $99 for the first month, $49 a month after that, and you got a 60-day money-back guarantee. So with that said, and my cell phone ringing in the background, I'm going to say goodnight, everybody. Hope you... have a great week, and hopefully we'll talk to you tomorrow night on Terry's call. Good night, everyone.